I saw that Amanda has a letter from the Easter Bunny saying that he's going to be able to make it this year.
Yeah, I saw. I haven't read it yet, but I saw that she has that. I'm really glad that arrived because we had a meltdown the other day. It was like full on tears, and this is me, right? I mean, this is full on tears, just like weeping openly. And the concern was, you know, because of the sickness, which is what my daughter calls it, because of the sickness, the Easter Bunny wouldn't be able to come. And fortunately, Easter Bunny, like Santa and other wonderful helpers who help us remember spiritual holidays in a non-spiritual way, you know, they're immune to this sort of thing. So really, we should really be testing the Easter Bunny to see if we can get some of that immunity. That's what we should be doing.
Maybe that's to capture him.
And then spread that blood on your door, and that will protect you from... Wait, hold on. This is wrong. I'm mixing stories now. That's not right.
That's good enough. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to explore our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Hey, we're doing well. You know, we're living in this Easter life, man. Post-resurrection, tomb is empty. We're ready to go. Let's do some stuff in our homes by ourselves, away from other people. But let's do some stuff.
Yeah, we have spent a week where Timmy is waking up at 5 a.m. every morning, and it is a rough.
That sounds like all sorts of fun for you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to convince him he is a non-essential employee. And that he can just relax, you know, like he doesn't need to come in, do anything. Nothing going on.
You don't need to get up early and take a shower. You can just stay home.
Yeah.
We'll keep feeding you 3 meals a day.
Stay in your jammies.
Or however
as
many
long
meals.
As you
I don't know. How many meals does your kid eat at this point? Like 8, probably.
He eats 4 meals and then 1 snack.
Oh, all right.
And that does not include bottles.
Wow. So, all right. This is the young man
if
is putting
bottles,
it away.
Bottles. He would do 1, 2, 3, 4, he would do like 9 meals a day. So.
Nice. Attaboy. That's my quarantine meal regimen right there. It's like,
yes.
Looks
my,
like
my
it's
2 weeks
eating
worth
a clock.
Of food lasted 2 days. So.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
All right. Well, I've got some news for us to look at.
All right.
All right. I got 2 things here, real quick.
Cool.
So, first up, Stephen King.
I've heard of
Are
him.
You familiar?
Yeah.
Yes. He is apologizing.
Uh oh. Did he predict
it? Because it feels like you're stuck in a Stephen King novel.
Aw, poor Stephen King. I don't blame you, Stephen King. It's okay.
I mean, I guess it does. Like, there's one novel, The Shining, I don't know if you're familiar, where the family is kind of stuck in a hotel for months,
right.
And the dad ultimately goes crazy. It's a haunted hotel, so that's part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All work and no play makes somebody go crazy. I don't remember his name. That's The Shining, right? Yeah.
That's The Shining, yeah. He also does have a book all about a global pandemic that does kill 99.9% of the population.
Hey.
So let's fingers crossed on that one. Like,
we finally want to be part of the 0.01%.
Yes. Yeah, that's you don't want to be part of the 99% protesters.
What was that really terrible Dan Brown novel that came out? It was after Angels and Demons. That was it. It was after The Da Vinci Code, which was the only good one. And then he wrote Angels and Demons. And it was about somebody who was trying to start a global pandemic because we needed to control the population. So that's fun.
Sure. Well, if you're on Facebook, I'm sure you've seen people probably spouting some conspiracy theories similar to that.
About I've heard
COVID.
that 5G networks are behind the coronavirus.
It's the 5G, man. That's it. It's all it's a media hoax. I drove to a hospital, friend of a friend drove to the hospital and they didn't see anybody there. So
yeah, there was no one at the hospital. So this is all just made up.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah. All right. So I think that's interesting. Stephen King, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You feel like Stephen King? The other news article I have is a man arrested going 130 miles per hour.
Sure.
Claims his excuse to get out of the ticket or out of the jail. He was trying to avoid coronavirus.
By driving faster, I love it.
Yeah, faster than the virus can go.
Do we have a clock on the coronavirus? Do we know its ability? It's like, sir,
we need to send this information to who is it, Dr. Fossey?
Yeah,
is that the guy?
The handshake guy. Yep.
Yeah, handshake guy. How fast do we need to be driving to avoid coronavirus?
Yeah, right. I feel like 100 probably would have done it. I feel like, you could have gotten away with that excuse at 100, been like, I'm just out driving the coronavirus, man, but. 130, you're just being greedy. That's just, that's buying
the
extra roll of toilet paper that you don't need. That's what that is.
88 miles per hour. I think that's going back in time.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can go back in time at 88 miles an hour, then surely you can outrun coronavirus at 100.
Let me, Let me ask you, Pastor David, have you ever gotten out of a speeding ticket, talked your way out of one?
I have never been pulled over for a speeding ticket. I have sped Whoa. In my life. I will admit here and now, I have sped. Yeah. But I have, knocking on wood, I have never been pulled over for speeding, nor have I ever gotten a ticket. So I've never had to talk my way out of it.
Okay, there you go. Do you keep a pastoral collar in the glove box just in case?
I do keep a pastoral collar in the car. Not for that. That is not its purpose. It is there because more often than not on Sunday mornings, I would forget it in my house and I'd walk out with my shirt on and not a collar. Yeah. So it's there for that. But no, I have not had to pull it out for that.
I have talked my way out of a few speeding tickets. Yeah, especially, no. When I lived in LaGrange, I was working at a summer camp, and I sometimes got pulled over in the surrounding area. I have not been pulled over in the last, 10 years, but prior to that,
that's a good thing for us to know for our youth director who drives our children places. That's a good disclaimer. That's right.
Often before that, I've gotten a few speeding tickets, but I'd give my license, and it would have the camp is the same name as the camp road, so my address would be the camp road. And he's like, "Do you work at that summer camp?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, I work there." And he's like, cops often be like, "Well, I went there when I was a kid, because they all live in the same area."
Yeah.
Have a nice day. So that was, having that license got me out of quite a few tickets at the time.
I had like a get out of speeding tickets free. I like it. That's very handy.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's get into our main topic.
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right, Pastor David, why don't you introduce us?
Yeah.
This was your idea.
This is my idea. So I've been thinking about a lot of stuff because I got time to think. But I've been thinking about the way in which the world is going to be forever changed by this COVID-19 mm-hmm. process, right? Even if we go back to some semblance of normal, it will never be the same again. It'll never be exactly like it was, because that's what happens. A world event happens, and suddenly we realize that we can do 95% of our shopping online. And so, grocery stores start looking drastically different even after we're allowed to go back to them, or whatever that might be. And there are two kind of demographics that I see responding to this in a particular way. And I think they both have interesting things for us to think about when it comes to our faith. The first is ESPN. Do you watch a lot of ESPN, Patrick? I know you're a big basketball guy, but...
Yeah. I don't. I can say that.
Yeah, right?
We do have the Disney Plus Hulu /ESPN subscription fee.
Right.
I've never used the ESPN portion of that.
Fair enough.
And it's there. I would watch basketball if it was on.
Yeah. So that's the thing. Like, ESPN has basically said, you know what? All sports are canceled, right? Nobody's competing anywhere. Nobody's doing anything. Basically, runners are the only ones who are allowed to continue training because their facilities are still open, being the road. So beyond that, ESPN has basically said, all right, well, let's just take all the old stuff that we've done before, all the things that used to be great that people loved, and let's show them again. So basically every ESPN channel has become some version of ESPN Classic, with the occasional news breaks about some trade deal that's happening or something, but essentially they've said, let's just hold on to what used to be great and let's show that over and over and let people just live into that nostalgia. And we've talked about nostalgia before too, so we won't get into that right now. On the other side of this, we have like universities and schools, elementary schools, high schools, who have all said within moments, all right, we have to drastically and radically shift how we are doing education and how we are approaching our kids for this new environment that we're living in, right? We have to do this in a brand new way. And so within a week's time, in many instances, teachers and administrators and professors have all shifted to doing things online and figuring out, what does this mean for us to host a Zoom meeting, for us to host classes for our students, for us to teach our students through this, for us to find ways to prove that our students are learning the material that they're supposed to be learning, provide accountability, all of this. And so we've got these kind of two competing ideas of, how do we react to a global shift? One, are we going to draw in on ourselves and say, well, let's just go back and relive what used to be great? Or two, are we going to shift and find a new way to live into this culture? And I think that's the really valuable question for our faith. Now, obviously, both of these are imperfect examples, right? Because in all likelihood, this is going to break and schools are going to go back. For the majority, schools are going to go back to the way they were, right? People are still going to go to high school in a classroom. And ESPN is going to go back to showing sporting events. And I'm going to watch, frankly. So, that's not going to change. But I think it gives us a glimpse into the possibility mm-hmm. of our faith life as well, right? I mean, look at how we're doing church right now. We're doing church entirely online. We're pre-recording all of our services at Lord of Life. Different people are finding different ways to do that. But we're pre-recording mm-hmm. our services at Lord of Life. We're recording this on Thursday morning, and I just finished doing Easter. So on Easter morning, I'm going to get up, and I'm going to watch service with my family from my couch. We're going to have a Sunday school time, but it's going to be a very different feel. And when this mm-hmm. is all over, when we're able to come together as a congregation again, what is that going to mean for us as individuals and sure. as communities? Are we going to live into this in a brand new way, or are we going to kind of retreat and withdraw and say we need to secure ourselves with what felt good once upon a time?
Yeah, for sure. I definitely see that. And I think even within the Christian community and the American Christian community, you're going to see both those things at odds with one another as well. This will come out the day after Easter, and it's undeniable there will be churches in America that open their doors on Easter morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's how they do things, and they're going to ask their parishioners to come in
yeah.
to church on Easter morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you and I have talked about this both, I think a little on the air and a little off the air. I think that's completely irresponsible and
yeah. Yeah.
and it's a disservice to their community, believers and their community that they serve. But that is something that they're doing. And so having this kind of, how can we pivot because of this thing has happened that's outside of our control. So now how can we pivot into a new experience or something or how to provide something new and not just rely on what was old is difficult. I mean, yeah. like it is a tough yeah. thing. It's a tough thing for a lot of cultures to do. It's something for nations to do. And if we look back kind of in history, there are moments, big and small, where something happens and culturally things have to shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're in probably one of those shifts of maybe there's a lot of businesses out there that are realizing, hey, maybe we don't actually need a building.
Right.
And we can have everybody just buy them a laptop and they can work from home. We can do everything we're doing. We can just do like this.
Yeah.
And owning a building is just not financially smart anymore.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
Cause you don't need it. And like, and I'm not saying, we're going to do that as a congregation.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like we're just getting rid of the building.
Well, we just paid off our mortgage, so it sounds like a good time to sell.
yeah. I mean, and like you think, I think you mentioned like we're figuring out how to use the technology to our advantage. For like one of the Linton services, I did the sermon and I recorded it from my kitchen table.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we put it all together and we were able to do those things. And so I think that's interesting. By the way, ESPN does have new content.
Ooh.
They have marble racing. Okay. Marble racing is happening.
I'm sorry, what?
On ESPN.
Marble racing?
Yes. It's exactly what it sounds like. There's little tracks and you put marbles in them and then they race on the tracks and you see which marble is going to be the first one.
Like the old Marble Works marbles? Is this what this is?
It's marbles. I don't know, man.
All right, I need to go check this out. This sounds incredible. This is definitely how I'm going to be wasting a couple of hours where I should be sleeping tonight. And you know, we've been talking about worship in particular with Lord of Life, because I think that's where we're feeling this most directly right now, right? I mean, we're most impacted by the fact that we're going to have Easter service and none of us are going to be in this building, right? It's going to be Sunday morning. The resurrection is going to be being proclaimed and nobody will be in our church. And that'll be a weird feeling for us. It's not something that we're familiar with. And I don't think that that's something necessarily that we're going to want to lose, right? I do think we're going to want to find ways to come together and gather as a community, even when this is over. And I do think we want to have that worship together in a space. But how are we going to find new ways to do meetings, to do Bible studies, to do small groups? How are we going to find new ways to include people in worship who can't be physically in our building for one reason or another? Right? I mean, you know, we're going to have a council meeting pretty soon where we're going to be coming together on a Zoom call from wherever we are in all of our own homes. You know, and every other time we've ever had a council meeting, we've said we have to be physically in the same space. And, you know, recently we've said, okay, we've had to be physically in the same space, but we'll make an exception for this person who travels a lot. They can call in. Well, now, you know, can we all call in, right? You know, can we all, sure. you know, have this meeting from, you know, what does this mean for how we're going to live out our faith every day. And I think this can be true in our personal lives too. This doesn't just have to be a kind of corporate discussion of what does it look like for the church, but, you know, as individuals, as families, if we're taking care of our kids' faith, right, we're maybe not able to rely on Sunday school or on standard youth group activities the way we normally would have to quote unquote kind of cover our kids for faith. And so we're having to take some of that on ourselves. And so what does it mean for us to more seriously do faith in the home, more seriously take a part of being faith in the home and spreading that? What does it mean for us to encourage our kids to watch something on TV that is faith-based and keep them engaged in that? I love, you'll have already done this by the time this comes out, but you're doing the Easter bingo, right? What does it mean for us to come up with meaningful ways for kids to engage in worship? Because now they're going to be able to sit in front of a TV that they're probably most accustomed to watching, you know, something completely non-faith-based on, right? I mean, just odds are in favor that that's how they spend the majority of time in front of their TV, if they're spending any time there. And so if that's what they're used to doing, how do we now help them see this thing, this used to be a box, I guess now it's more of just a square because it's flat, but this, you know, flat square can convey faith to you, can be something from which you can learn about God and Jesus, and it can mean things for you in an important way. And in some ways, it's weird because for years, I have been like, man, televangelists are the worst, right?
They still are.
Right? but now we all are televangelists, right? Now suddenly every church, well, not every church because you've already said that, but most churches, including the majority of Lutheran churches, are suddenly televangelists and are finding ourselves proclaiming things to an empty TV camera and trying to figure out what that means. It is weird for us as it is for you. I just, you know, I promise that if you're watching a service at home and you're thinking, well, that seems weird, I assure you it was 10 times weirder for the person that was recording it in the first place.
Yeah. So attached to this, when we talked about this idea, I was like, let me think about like, what are some other instances in like history that I could come up with that like, have this kind of dramatic cultural or national shift.
Yep.
And I am not a history guy.
Excellent.
One of the things we're doing a lot as a church community right now is I'm playing a lot of trivia crack with people.
Like, good Lord.
Unbelievable amount of trivia crack. There are times I had like 30 games going at once. Okay.
Because
we're trying to stay connected.
While we're on the trivia crack note, I just want to be clear that every time a science question comes up about what breed of dog is this, I just want to throw my phone across the window. Like, that should not be a science question. This is stupid. I know information. I can't identify breeds of dogs. I should not be punished for that.
Trust me. I'm with you right there. What breed of dog is this? What flower is this?
Yeah, who cares?
Hate it.
I don't care.
It's the worst. So history is not one of my top ones, right? I'm usually entertainment, art, and geography would be my three tops.
I believe that.
And there's six categories on Trivia Crack.
Yeah.
Science is my worst. But I've been thinking of like, okay, so what are these cultural shifts? So first, you know, I want to have, we can talk about Martin Luther. He had experienced kind of a cultural shift around the same time, and that was the invention of the printing press.
Which basically made the Reformation possible. Like,
yes.
There were thinkers who were putting out Martin Luther's ideas before Martin Luther, who Martin Luther drew on as he's creating his, you know, his works and everything like that, but they didn't have a way to disseminate the information.
Yeah. Once the printing press hits the scene, and we could say the world was never the same.
Yeah.
It's one of those types of things. Like, what used to take years to get information out there or to copy a book to another copy now is taking days, you know, to get information out there. So that's something that's a powerful thing. And so for Martin Luther being able to say, like, one of the things he utilized during that time is, let's utilize this tech to retranslate everything that's in Latin that nobody speaks into German.
Right.
And so everyone who comes to worship is speaking their language that they know, instead of they're saying things in Latin that they have no idea what they're saying.
Right.
And so I think that is utilizing that technology of the time and saying, okay, let's lean into this. And Martin Luther was a person on that side. There were priests and religious sects that were against that type of thinking and saying, like, no. We need
most
to stick
priests
to the
and religious sects.
Ways.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he was definitely in the minority at that point.
And now, ultimately, everybody's kind of caught up.
Yeah.
You know, at least every major Western religion is kind of caught up to that of, like, we all speak English or the language of the people when you're doing service.
Yeah.
There are at least the time that was...
I would say there are at least sects of every major religion that have caught on it, right? I mean, it's not, there's still, you know, there's still orthodox sides of basically every branch, but, you know,
there's
a mainstream section of pretty much every major religion globally that is doing that sort of thing. That's saying we do that. We do this in the language of the people. We do this in the language that they can connect to.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one example of, okay, this thing happened, world changed, and maybe didn't even know the world was going to change when Gutenberg built the printing press. Maybe he didn't even know, you know, like this was going to be this major thing. And then, you know, we also have not just technological advances. Sometimes there are things that happened, like, for example, like war changes things for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You think of Japan before World War II was a militaristic nation, had a large enough navy to challenge the United States in the Pacific. I'm not going to say, you know, obviously the United States ends up winning the Pacific, but to think that they could challenge the United States in the Pacific was island hopping to conquer and to build supplies. Then the bombings of Nagasaki and Hiroshima happened. They surrender in World War II. And within 10 years, their army is gone. And that was part of the treaty. But like now, no standing army at all for Japan. And that's a huge shift in less than 100 years from a militaristic conquering nation to we've shifted our ideals completely to no standing army on any level.
Yeah.
That's a pretty powerful thing. You know, and then we think of like a modern shift that has happened. And I think I experienced this in, especially in youth ministry, and that would be the invention of the smartphone. That all of a sudden, everybody has a computer in their pocket that's more powerful than what NASA used to launch ships to the moon. Here we have it in our pockets. We're playing Trivia Crack like NASA would do, I'm sure, at the time with the astronauts.
That's basically what Neil Armstrong was doing. He was just playing Trivia Crack all the way to and from.
They're just playing trivia back and forth. Right. It's a delay, I'm sure, but they're just, you know, it's okay.
Yeah.
And with the invention of smartphone, some interesting like side things have happened. With that, teen suicide rose dramatically and is still continuing to rise.
Yep.
And, you know, we're saying like, well, why is that? And I think it's this social media pressure is kind of rising along with smartphone technology and all this, and kids are feeling that along with anonymous online bullying that wasn't necessarily as present. And so every technological or major shift has kind of sometimes these downsides attached to it too. You know, that's possible. And so, you know, so we can say here, coronavirus, maybe some really interesting and good things coming out of how we have to rethink how we're doing business, connection, church, every aspect of our life is having to shift and change. And there's also going to be a lot of downside attached to this too, as we struggle to adjust and figure things out. And I'm sure a lot of businesses are going to be feeling that, especially in the interim of how do we figure this out?
You know, we were, I was talking with some other pastors about this online the other day, and, you know, one of them was talking about what it was, Dr. Fauci or whoever it was that you referenced earlier, who's basically said, like, this might mean that this is going to be the end of the handshake in the United States, right? That, like, we're finally going to see that handshaking is actually a really simple way to pass a whole lot of really terrible stuff. And that by just not shaking hands, we can prevent a lot of things. But at the same time, you know, I was talking with these pastors and they're like, the number of single older adults that I live with or that I work with as pastors who say the passing the peace and shaking hands is the only physical human contact that they have throughout the week. Right. And like the thought of that having to be taken away is heartbreaking in some way, right? Because especially for someone like myself, right? I spend most of my day being climbed on by a 4-year-old or by a 8-month-old. And if I'm not being climbed on, you know, I have a wife who I can hug or I can, you know, give a high five to somebody at church or whatever, you know, there's all sorts of ways that I have this kind of physical encounter, which is so important for us. Right? Well, let's not downplay that. I mean, one of the reasons that quarantine is so isolating is because we don't have physical touch. Like, it's not just that we're not seeing people, it's that we're not able to feel people's presence. And the thought of that being lost because of a disease, because of something that's come into play for someone who doesn't have any other way to get that, that's heartbreaking, right? Or the thought of, you know, the thought of having to do communion differently than we do it now, right? You know, let's face it, we're doing communion completely differently than we've ever done it before right now. And I still believe God is fully present in this process, and God is working through it in the same way that God would if we were gathered in the same space. But for some people, you know, some people, even our own congregation, are saying, I'm glad that Lord of Life is offering this, but it's not something that I'm comfortable doing. I really prefer to take communion from a common cup, or I prefer to take communion in this way or that way. And to think, well, we may never be able to do that. We don't know. You know, we have no idea if we're ever going to be able to do something like that again. And the thought of that, you know, being lost for people, we'll have to continue to shift our theology and our understanding of how God works. But there will also be an appropriate place to grieve the things that we lose. You know, I've been doing those daily devotions, you know, and I talked about this a little while ago. And this seems to be one that particularly resonated with people. It was this idea that it's okay to grieve stuff during this time, right?
Absolutely.
As we're going through this coronavirus thing, don't let people convince you that you have to just look on the bright side all the time. No, some stuff sucks. Some stuff is worth grieving, and that is an okay thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even talking with like our teenagers, like telling my seniors, being like, it's okay to grieve that you're not going to have a prom.
Yeah.
Like, that's okay.
Yeah.
Like you acknowledge it's a relatively minor thing in the grand scope of your life and in the worldwide issue going on right now, but it still matters. And it's okay to say, like, I miss it. Like, we as a family are grieving that our, you know, grandparents have not seen our son. When this comes out, his birthday will be in less than 1 week.
Yeah.
And we were going to have a birthday party, and now we're not.
Yeah.
And we're grieving that.
Yeah.
And he's fine. He's not going to know much one way or the other. But we're grieving, like, we're not going to have friends and family, like, celebrate this year of life and the next year of life and things like that. And that's sad. It's okay to be sad about those things. We, a few weeks ago, talked about the lamenting process that the church is okay to go through.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest thing to take away, or one of the biggest things to take away from the Old Testament is, like, God is fine when people want to grieve.
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to affect, there's an entire book of the Bible, or two books of the Bible, dedicated to grief, Job and Lamentations.
Yeah.
And all the Psalms can have aspects of grief in them. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus will quote on the cross, not the Psalm about God being comforting, God being providing, God being protecting, but he will quote the Psalm of God feeling abandoned by God. And that's something that Israel has had in their repertoire for 1,000 years at that point, that people have been singing and saying 1,000 years of, we feel abandoned by God, and Jesus can latch into that on the cross.
Yeah.
And so it's okay for us now, 2,000 years later, to say, like, sometimes we do. Sometimes we're saying, where is God in all of this? And it's okay to have that mystery there.
Yeah.
It's okay to not have an easy answer or a pat answer of, like, oh, well, you know, here's where we see God. And I see God a lot in the midst of this. I think there's a lot of beautiful things happening. But it's also okay to say, like, I'm really lonely.
Yeah.
And I'm really struggling.
Yep.
And I really need this fixed, and it's not happening.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's and there's no end in sight. There's no light at the end of the tunnel to even say, hey, in 2 weeks, life goes back to normal. We don't know when life goes back to normal or what the life goes back to normal even is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a new normal that'll be coming in for all of us? And that's kind of what we've been talking about. Like, how is this going to change the future? It's a bit of a mystery.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I just experienced, so we're recording this on Maundy Thursday. So tonight, on day of recording tonight, our service will go live at 7 p.m. And when we do the Maundy Thursday service, we've talked about this before, we do the stripping of the altar where everything's taken away. And the kind of traditional thing is to read Psalm 22 while you are doing the stripping of the altar. And last night, as we were recording the Maundy Thursday service for it to be released, I kind of heard Psalm 22 in a new way, like you sometimes do, right? And, you know, for whatever reason, something new catches your attention. And Psalm 22, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me, right? All this grief, all this pain, all this acknowledgement of feeling like God has abandoned us, like feeling like, you know, life is just pain and darkness and suffering, and this is awful, and how could God ever let this happen? And yet the last line of the psalm is they will know God has acted. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, it's that, it's that beautiful reminder that you can have all this stuff. You can list out all the ways in which you feel abandoned or sorrowed or lamenting, whatever it is that you're feeling. And in the end, and that end might not come, right? That end might not come until we see Jesus face to face. We don't know when that end is going to come. But in the end, we will know God has acted. That in the midst of all of it, we will still eventually know God is acting to bring about salvation, to bring about redemption, to draw us into new life. All of that will still be true, even if we don't know it until we pass from this earth. All of it will still be true.
Yeah, there's a quote that I don't know who said it, but like, life is lived forward but understood backwards.
Yeah, it was Martin Luther.
Is that Martin Luther?
No, but, you know, okay. Why not?
He has a lot of things attributed to him that I'm not sure are actually things he said. So
it was Mark Twain. Yeah, that's who it was. It was Mark Twain.
Yeah, probably. You know, but I think that does have that aspect of, like, right now we're living it forward in a state of, I don't understand, I cannot see, I don't know what's going on. And maybe when we reach the end, and whatever that end looks like, and we can look back, we can understand how God is working clearer than we could in the moment. So I think that's a powerful thing. And quote I do know is from the movie.
Excellent.
Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, all right. Now we're talking. All
one of my favorites. Yeah. This is a really good animated film. It's not Disney, but I think it's Disney quality.
It's
really
DreamWorks, isn't it?
DreamWorks, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would be maybe one of the best non-Disney animated movies. It's really quality and has a clear religious message. Like, it leans into the text as best it can.
Yeah.
You know, well, to produce something for a secular audience with a religious theme, I think it does as good a job as it could possibly do. No other movie, I think, does a better job.
That's a reasonable argument,
Of doing those things. But one of the songs sung by Moses's father-in-law in there kind of says, like,
Jethro, right?
Basically, Jethro. Yeah. Jethro Tull. Yes.
Nope, that's not it. So close.
He kind of says, like, basically, life is only understood when you look at your life from heaven's eyes. So that's kind of that same meaning. So, like, here in the midst of the muck and mire, that's all we see. But when we're able to take that step back and look at it differently, and maybe we can't do this till the next life, you know, like, it is understood and seen differently. And we're going to have powerful stories when we all get together to say, like, how did you see God? And we'll all have a powerful way of saying, like, this is how I experienced it. This is what it was like. And also, like, powerful stories of grief of, like, and this is how it hurt to go through this process.
Yeah.
And I think that all those things are okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't. Maybe this isn't worth saying, but we'll try it anyway. Sometimes an occupational hazard of pastors is that we try to push people to that point too fast, right? So, you know, we kind of come in and we say, "All right, you've been sad for a while. You feel sad, and so now we're going to say, all right, what's God doing in this? Let's look for God." Mm-hmm. And sometimes people aren't there. And one of the things that I try to take very seriously, and, you know, for our listeners, I hope that you can take this seriously for yourself and for others, is that it's okay to just sit. Right. It's okay to just, this is what Job's friends do for 3 days, which is frankly the only thing they do right in the entire story. But they sit for 3 days without saying anything with Job. And that's an okay thing. We don't have to rush in and draw people. You know, people are not in danger of losing their salvation if we don't get them to turn back to God and see something good right now. You know, people's salvation in Jesus Christ is assured. That's taken care of. It is okay for us to experience grief and lament, and it's okay for us to let people be in that place and trust that when the time is right, we can feel that lead to come back to where we see God through the whole process.
Yeah. Amen. All right. I think that that's a good place for us to, we'll give a virtual high five here. That's a good place for us to maybe put a pin on it, as best a pin as we can.
Our virtual high five was just as awkward as an in-person high five would have been.
Sure, absolutely.
You're coughing.
So I coughed. I know many of our listeners are members of our congregation, Lord of Life. Over the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've been doing a lot to kind of, like, here we are, we're capturing our social media, our internet presence. And I know you and I have talked a little bit off a podcast of, like, now we're kind of buckling in for the long haul.
Yeah.
And that may mean some of the things we were doing will shift and change. Maybe we'll be adding in new things, things like that. Because now we're like, we were off to the races early, and now we're saying, okay, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And so we're going to figure out how to do this marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've really loved Pastor David's daily devotionals, we could say maybe you're not going to give
bad.
One every day.
Yeah.
Or if you've really loved our daily prayer in the evening, maybe it's not going to be every day. And maybe something else will come in to supplement that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're still going to be active. We're still going to have a lot of stuff going out there, but it just may be different going forward.
And some things are going to be settling into more of a, I don't want to use the word normal, but more of a typical routine, right? I mean, we're going to be able to have more groups who are having their regular meetings in a new format, in a new place. But we have now the technology, we've been practicing with people, we have ways to do that. So some of that will not be as needed. I don't know. There's not a good way to say that, but we're going to be working hard. We're going to be providing great ministry. It's just going to look different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so where can you find us?
Hey, if you liked what you heard, as every week, you can find us and all of our episodes at www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. We know that your choices for entertainment are virtually endless, given the world that you live in, and we are grateful for you choosing us every time that you tune in to listen to the dulcet tones of Patrick and Pastor David. You can share a rate review on Apple iTunes or your Google Play, all the places where delectable podcasts are available for your entertainment pleasure. Did I do it?
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Send us an email or something too. Why not?
Yeah.
Do those things.
We'd love to have any interaction with other humans. So please.
We'll take whatever we can get. That's...
Yeah. Yeah. You watching anything?
Am I watching anything? With two kids at home and Holy Week planning, there has been very limited time to watch much of anything. I'm pretty high on things.
Yeah, watching a lot of Disney Plus.
There you go.
It's kind of like my day. Every day we kind of watch a new Disney Plus movie. Timmy bangs blocks together. I watch it while I sit with him and work. So, that's good.
I've been watching Tournament of Champions on Food Network. We'll have to talk about this another time because this is more than I can do right now. But it's basically fulfilled all of the things that I've been missing about sports. It's great.
Yeah, we're rewatching Top Chef right now.
Nice.
So, old Top Chef episodes that's our nightly routine.
There you go.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next Monday.